Lord. May the words of my mouth and meditation of our hearts always be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Even to this day, my mother calls my father and me to the kitchen table with, "Get your 10 little people washed, dinner's on the table." Yep, 43 years old, and my mother still does that, and my father's 60-something, so. It could almost seem that Jesus and his Pharisees and the Pharisees are having a disagreement about hygienic hand washing before meals, something that we would tend to accept as an obvious health measure. The debate, however, is over the observance of certain ritual behaviors that have their root in the interpretation of the laws of the Torah rather than the observance of a specific law or health practice. The Torah, the first five books of the Hebrew Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, contain a number of laws governing various aspects of human life. Tradition says that there are 613 of these laws in the Torah, and a portion of this law found in the book of Leviticus, chapter 15, details laws concerning ritual washings after coming into contact with certain bodily fluids. And I won't go into detail. Read Leviticus chapter 15. It's an interesting read. From this section of laws, the Pharisees of Jesus' time established rules for ritual washing in other contexts. And one of these was a ritual washing of the hands before and after the consuming of bread. Pure water was to be poured over the hands three times while reciting the following prayer blessing. Blessed are you, O Lord, our God, King of the universe, who has sanctified us with his commandments and has commanded us concerning the elevation of hands. And part of the process of the washing was pouring the water, and the water had to flow down and over the elbow. It was a ritual washing. That any clean, dry substance, such as sand, could be used for this ritual washing provides evidence that this is something other than a hygiene issue and had more to do with some types of ritual uncleanliness. So this is a debate about the interpretation and application of the Jewish law. It's further illustrated by the parallel issue that Jesus raises about the honoring of one's father and mother. We are all familiar with the commandment that we commonly call the fourth commandment that says, "Honor your father and mother, that your days may be long in the land which the Lord your God gives to you." And I often make the joke that if you dishonor your mother and father, they make your days very, very short. The Pharisees, however, allowed a person to identify a portion of his possessions as dedicated to God, and this person could still maintain the use of these possessions. But since they were dedicated, they could claim not to have the funds to provide support for one's parents when they were in need. Jesus attacks this lack of charity toward one's parents, demonstrating how the Pharisees could twist the law in order to act in very uncharitable ways, a practice Jesus frequently attacks in multiple exchanges with the Pharisees of his time. However, when Jesus gets alone with his disciples, it becomes clear that they don't quite understand this controversy, just as we might miss it today if we think it is simply an argument about whether one has indeed washed his or her hands before coming to the dinner table. And believe me, I've had these discussions with my mother at the dinner table, and she might be listening to this afternoon. Yes, mother, I always wash my hands. They ask, Jesus' disciples ask him to interpret this parable to them. And the fact that they call it a parable right off the bat tells you they didn't get it. They think he's telling a parable. I chuckle every time I read this because I can imagine Jesus sitting there, his hand on his forehead, shaking his head at the dense minds of the disciples, saying, "It wasn't a parable, guys. I was speaking quite plainly." Jesus, however, appears far more patient than I would imagine, though I do detect a bit of frustration in his voice as he says, "Listen to me, all of you, and understand. There is nothing outside a person that by going in can defile, but the things that come out are what defile." Jesus dismantles the ritual observance of laws that had the purpose of maintaining a ritual state of purity, instead shifting the focus to how our actions can defile. Jesus provides a list, which I'm certain is not all-inclusive, of what comes from within the human heart. Those evil intentions, fornication, theft, murder, adultery, avarice, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, envy, slander, pride, folly. I joke with my students, this sounds like a list of things to do on a weekend. For some of them, it might be. We have all probably heard the saying, cleanliness is next to godliness. And I believe Jesus would probably agree with this statement, despite this controversy over hand washing. Hygiene is important. But note how the saying is worded. Cleanliness is next to godliness, but cleanliness is not godliness. If we were to value the two, put a price tag or a value on either one, I think most of us would agree that it is the godliness that is more important. It is toward godliness that Jesus wants to move the Pharisees, his disciples, and us. The evil things that can come out of us, the vices, are what defile us and move us away from godliness. How we treat each other demonstrates how stained or pure our souls are. It is here that we can turn to the advice given in the letter of James. James warns us, if any think they are religious and do not bridle their tongues but deceive their hearts, their religion is worthless. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this: to care for orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained by the world. Just as Jesus' list of the vices, that which defiles, is not comprehensive, I would argue that James' list here of what constitutes pure and undefiled religion is not exhaustive either, but that it points toward how that religion is to be lived. Care for orphans and widows in their distress is one portion of how we care for those less fortunate and for each other. Pure and undefiled religion is relational. Just as God is three persons united in one nature as the Holy Trinity, we, as the church, are many people united in love for each other. When our lives are marked by godliness in the way we treat each other, then we are living out a pure and undefiled religion. How many times at our dinner tables have we arrived with scrubbed hands, but then allowed the tabletop conversation to devolve into bitterness, complaining, fighting, and even bitterly cold silence toward one another? We may keep our kitchen spotless and have little risk of salmonella or E. coli infections from our food, but what infections of bitterness and anger run through our hearts and poison the meals we share, or even refuse to share, with others? In just a short time, we will leave this space and gather in the church hall for our monthly potluck. While I would definitely endorse washing our hands before eating, and I may even say, are we all in our places with our clean little 10 fingers? I would encourage each and every one of us to examine our hearts also, to see if we are able to eat in godliness with each other. And if not, to work toward healing whatever it is that stands in the way of our ability to do so. For only then can we do, in this space, in this church, what is true, pure, and undefiled religion before God. Amen.